So here we go. But we're going to talk about tables today. We're going to talk about kind of different kinds of tables. In particular, on Monday, I had these really two kind of interesting conversations over these different kinds of tables. And so the first interaction, kind of midday or so, I went out. We have a storage container, like one of those sea containers, out on a farm, kind of, like 7 minutes this direction. And so as I was, I always feel like I'm breaking in because I'm going on somebody else's property. We kind of know some of the farmers, but oftentimes the people that are working there, we have no idea who they are. And so whenever I see somebody, I think, I feel like I'm breaking in with this like ghetto padlock and it's all going. So there was this front end loader that was like pulled up probably about this far from the doors of the sea container. And so what I had been doing is I had been pulling stuff out of the container that I needed for this weekend and putting more stuff back in. And so there was this kind of makeshift table that we'll use this as an example, but that I had just kind of been placing on the bucket of this front end loader. And the guy kind of rolls up and starts talking to me like we know each other. Now, it turns out, never met him before, right? Have you ever had those conversations where you're going, I feel like, and you're speaking like, we are best friends. And we had never seen each other before. So we start having this conversation though, and I started talking to him about kind of what I was doing and the church, and I had to get the sound equipment for the event that we had in that evening, and I was doing all this stuff. He's like, I didn't realize, churches did that. And we started talking, and then there was this shift in the conversation. I don't know how we got there, but he goes, you know what the problem with this world today is? And of course, I need to know, right? And so I say, no, tell me. And so then he goes on to definitely tell me, okay? And definitely tell me in a way that like all the stuff that was on our makeshift table as we were having fellowship over that front end loader, and he's telling me about like his life of doing all these kind of really eclectic, neat jobs. And I just found myself going, no way. That's super cool. Yeah, no, tell me, how did you get to that point? Yeah, all right. No, I don't think that's crazy. Tell me, what does that sound like? All right, cool. Looking at my watch, putting stuff back in the container. He doesn't seem to notice, so that's cool. And so I'm just going, and we're talking, and then finally, like the last thing comes off of that front-end loader table. And I'm like, oh, well, I've really got to go, but thanks a lot. And so I leave, of course. And he's like, yeah, great talking to you. We should do it again. And I'm thinking, I don't know that we should, right? Because I learned a lot about where he was. And essentially the way that it broke down, because then we started talking about, what the problem with young people today is. And he told me, and the whole summary of our conversation was, if things just went back to the way it was when I was a kid, in my particular situation, things would be great. If we just roll back the clock to where I was, none of these problems would happen. And it was interesting, right? Because there's some of that kind of my worldview, my context, my everything is built in a way that it would work for me if we did this and we could fix it if everybody just went back to the way that I saw things and it would be good. The unfortunate part is that oftentimes then the people that have also sat at the table with you have picked up their things and put them back in their box and they're ready to go home. Because if the conversation would have gone a different way, I would have invited him to the second event that I had. And so Monday evening, I got to share some time with about 52 or so high school athletes who are part of the cross country team. And every single one of those things that he said, what is wrong with these kids these days, right? Not one of those things did I see in the conversation and in the fellowship that we had there. In fact, tables, instead of being emptied slowly throughout the evening, when we got and met together, what was happening was that we would start pulling in chairs from other places and try to do one of those things of everybody scooch down just a few inches so that we can make room for other people, right? And then reflecting as we were talking and as the head coach was giving statistics about this group of 50 plus boys and thinking about, their direct contrast to the conversation that I had like 3 hours before, that this incredible group of young men then, I think there was close to 90% of them were above a 3.1 grade average. Isn't that crazy? That 16 or so of that 50, 52, 54 were 4.0 students. That a number of them work almost a full-time job and go to school and are athletes. And I couldn't help but think all of the things that I had that first front-end loader conversation with. That's not where we are, but there's a different perspective. But the difference in the way that we ended Monday night versus the way I ended my Monday afternoon was that we were excited on Monday evening to come back together. And it's not because we all looked and thought and believed in the same way, right? Because that cross-country team is probably one of the most diverse teams that we have at the high school. But there was a difference. And I think that as we continue on with this conversation, I think that we'll kind of get to what that difference might look like. But throughout the past few weeks or so, starting in December, we had this series that we've called Finding Your Christmas Spirit. Because in the midst of everything that we have going on, in the midst of all the stuff and the preparations and the things that we have to get going, sometimes that spirit gets eked out a little bit. And so we've been talking about the gifts that the Christmas Spirit gives us. And so the first weekend, it was creativity. And so we got to mold with some Play-Doh, and we got to color with some coloring pages, and we got to invest in the way that we have been created in the image of God. And so in that way, we have been called to create. And that sometimes the sin of shame kind of calcifies that creative spirit within us. And so God opens that up and says, no, you were made to create. Please lean into that. And then last week we talked a lot about water and in particular the dark waters that sometimes we have to go through to find our whole self. And then we reaffirm some baptismal vows, in particular of Aaron Trawick, where we remember the gift of the way that we can become new as we cross through those waters. And so today we're talking about in kind of this parallel tandem of change, we're talking about the gift of hospitality that goes beyond, thank goodness, it goes beyond like any show that you would see on like the Home and Garden Network, right? And hospitality is not about doilies and place settings, but it's about the way that we love one another, which is fantastic because my version of hospitality is that if there is hot coffee, that is all I'm going to do for you. You can find your own mug, but the coffee is there, which I know that some of you appreciate, right? And we'll have even like real liquid creamer is my top level kind of way of doing it. But as we come to this, I want to give you a little bit of context because we have to set the stage a little bit in the idea that some of those words of, if we just rolled back the clock, things would be better. And I'm gonna say that when we started our story, when we started our origin story, right, God did a thing. God created out of nothing. God created order out of chaos. And not too long after that beautiful and wonderful thing where we were incorporated and enfolded into this gift of creation, and there were some boundaries set up, and there was one rule, man. And then we jacked it up and like, you know, in just a little while. But then because of the new state of creation, God said that we are not living into this preferred future, that there is a better way to live. And so that begins this kind of trajectory and this tradition of God did a thing, creation, and then God sees what happened in the ramifications, and there is this grace that happens that doesn't say, well, you know, humanity has to live with the decisions of choosing their way over my way. And so God then did another thing. And God created this covenant with Abraham, the father of the faith, that said essentially, Abraham, I'm going to make for you a generations upon generations. You're going to be the father of you know, as many stars as there are in the sky. That's how many descendants you're going to have. And Abraham's first reaction was, I am an old dude. I can't deal with that. And all I can think is like we're in the process of adopting, and I'm thinking, man, if we get a little bundle of joy, you know, like when that finally happens, I am 36 years old. I don't know that I want to run around with a kid. And Abraham's like, I am super old. I'm thinking, man, did he have the energy for that? But what happens is, so God makes this covenant with Abraham. And the weird part, if you read that passage, is that God says, I'm gonna make this covenant with you. And so the way that they made covenants was that one person would stand at one end of like dead carcasses. And then another person would stand in another end of the bloody dead carcasses, and they would meet in the middle and they would have this interaction. But what happened was that Abraham fell asleep, and then when he woke up, he saw this torch kind of go across and take up both ends of the covenant. So what God said was, Abraham, what I'm going to do is that there was this thing that happened and it made you out of right relationship with me, but I'm going to make it so that there's a way that you can be in right relationship with me. Essentially, what happened was that God said, I'm going to do all the work to reset the table. So there's gonna be a way where you can come back and you can be sustained and you can connect with me, and there's gonna be all the things that you need for life, and that we can, the church word is called atonement, that we can be in covenant and conversation with one another in a new way. So God created, we messed up, and then God did a new thing. But are we there yet? Have we reached perfection and heaven and gift and all the possibility that God had with that covenant with Abraham? Absolutely not. But God took that next step, and this was a big step. But then God continues throughout history to do these new things. And so in this new way, God delivered Moses out of slavery, you know, through the Red Sea. God comes and then allows those people who keep saying, you know, if we were just a little bit more like the other people that we see, then we'd be good. And so God does this new thing and says you can have kings and judges and stuff like that. But then God does this other new thing. And God says, okay, so part of the issue is that you're having a hard time kind of visualizing where I reside. And so God, in this new thing, gives permission for people to create a box. How cool is that, right? Yeah, we get to make a box and we call it the temple, and that was great and everything. But then what happened is that then the table that had been prepared, essentially the box then made a container for God. And what happens with containers, Carrie, can you come up? Carrie's my lovely assistant today. And so what happens is that in this new thing that God had, because it was that next faithful step for God's people, because we're making baby steps towards the preferred future that God has for us, and this table is great and beautiful and bountiful, and there's a foretaste of heaven. And thanks, Carrie. And then in that new box, what happens is that we put up walls, right? And so now the feast, the gift, the thing is for me, but now it's not for you. It's for those who are insiders, but not those who are outside the walls. It's for the Jews, for the people of Israel, but it's not for the Gentiles and everybody else. This was still a step forward, because then it gives us a sample of what God is up to and doing. And who has done all the work to prepare the table? God has, right? God has. But the passage that Ben read for us, it said that there's gonna be a new temple that comes up. And so the temple that has been constructed is out of human hands, because we are really good. We are maybe the top three things that humanity is really good at is making sure that we know which box that we should fit into, right? And so God gives permission to make this box, and that's it. And then at one point in like 586 BC, the temple, the walls came down, and the people who knew and understood God to live inside the box, devastated, right? Because if God is here and then there's no more here, then where is God? And the people that made their life and living and everything else from that temple, just absolutely, you know, and it was because you read in scripture that it was because that the kings had lost their way and they were unfaithful to God and they did what was evil in God's sight. And so the temple was destroyed. And so now they're going, man, this place of center, this locus of control, this way that we knew God was acting and moving and being, and that's where the table was. And God had prepared the table right there, is now gone. And so for a period of time, there was no temple until for, you know, like, you know, 70 or so years then after that, when the temple was rebuilt. Now, if you have a gift, there we go, okay? You have a gift and it was taken away. And then you have to rebuild, you have to cultivate, you have to make it up again, and then you get that gift back, okay? Now, do you know in a little bit different way the value of that gift? Do you know it in a more personal way that, man, now this thing, this box that God said that we could build for God, that is a thing that I want to keep, right? and especially those guys who studied their entire lives, all 600 and however many laws, they're like, yeah, this is it. And we get the table and we get the gift and they hold on to it. And now throughout history, what has God been doing? A new thing, right? And have we reached the end of the new things yet? No. But it's our nature and it's fine, and it's wonderful to say this is the beautiful thing. And then when there's a little bit of tug, we just squeeze it. And that was the juiciest grape I've ever encountered. But then we squeeze the life out of it. We squeeze the holiness and we squeeze the mystery out of it. And then we want to make sure that nobody's going to mess with the walls that we have created. And then God did this new thing. God did this new thing about 2,000 years ago now, where this guy came and he was born in a manger and this little child, where he was this refugee, kind of outcast in this trough, and he was born. And God did this new thing where the word came down and was made flesh and cried and had dirty diapers and all the things that go along with being human. But then those people that are squeezing and holding on to the temple, and Jesus says to them, this is right after he like just kicks over tables, he knocks down stuff, and he says, you know, this, you've defiled my Father's house. Essentially, the box that God said that you could make, this isn't the way it was supposed to be. And then he says, I'll tear it down, and in 3 days, I'm gonna make a new temple. And they're going, dude, it took us 70 years to make this one again. 3 days? Ridiculous, right? What happened on 3 days? Like if we go back to like your Easter felt boards, okay, what happened in 3 days? It was the resurrection, right? And so Jesus says, I'm gonna take this next step. And what happens is incredible though, because Jesus says, I'm gonna make this new temple. I'm gonna make this way. And the beautiful thing is that Paul writes of this so perfectly in Ephesians, where he says, Christ himself has bought peace for us. He united Jews and Gentiles, those that are inside the law and those who are outside the walls. He united the Jews and the Gentiles into one people in his own body on the cross. He broke the wall of hostility and that separated us. So essentially that next step, that new thing that God has been doing is by going, the table's still good. But in fact, it's just a little small. And the thing that makes it too small is the wall, right? And so Jesus' whole thing is to say that this table has been prepared, but if we just get rid of the wall, that then there can be this table that is so much bigger than what you know right now. And so this new thing happened. And still some who were holding on to the grapes are going, no, that's not the way it works. And then the temple fell again in 70 AD, so after Jesus. But see, the new way has already been made. And so here's the gift, right? Is that the walls have come down, that there's enough space now, not only for those who have been on the inside all the time, the original people of God, the Jewish people, but also those like you and me who are the outsiders, who are the Gentiles, who weren't part of that first covenant with Abraham, that goes, there's enough space for you. Now that's like a big new step, and sometimes we miss that, right? That's a big new step of saying that this table is so large and so vast that no matter if you're meeting in a middle school on a Sunday morning, or you're meeting in a high church building in Frederick, or you're meeting in Thailand or wherever else, or even you're worshiping online, that there is space for you at this table. And that doesn't mean that it's all willy-nilly, that there's kind of table etiquette that happens about the way that we have conversation. But who's done all the work of setting the table? God has. Right? We have done no work in being the people who are gracious enough, good enough, or ready enough to be the ones who have set the table. And so what Jesus did then on that night in which he gave himself up for us is he did something different, but essentially he said, I have made this table ready for you. And now here's the gift of today. The gift of today is that there is enough grace and goodness to go around that I'm going to invite you in to the party, to the hospitality of this table. And so we need to do two things. We need to, number one, we need to enjoy the way that the table has been prepared and partake of what the table offers. And so today, you know, it's bread and grape juice, because there's something special that happens when God transforms the table into something that enfolds us into the larger story. But then also, we need to make sure that we are extending that hospitality to others, going, no, we've got a seat and it's ready and it's already saved for you. You don't need to be good enough. You don't need to be perfect enough. You don't need to get your stuff together, because if you wait for one day to happen, it's not gonna happen. But this gift that God has, this thing that we get to taste and see, and that little sample of heaven that is here and now, it's ready today. Whew, right? And so the question is, as news headlines come in, as I have conversations on tables that are fancy and set at Morningside Inn, or tables that are set on front end loaders, right? Because they can also all be holy spaces. Is then how can we make sure that people are bringing what they've got to the table and trying to pull up another chair versus going, I see what you're doing, but I'm going to put my stuff back in the box, right? How do we do that? Jesus tells us easily. You've heard it said that you know, you're supposed to love your neighbor and to give thanks to those, but I'm saying to you, and every time Jesus says, you've heard it said, but I say to you, he's going, I'm flipping the script, and God is taking that next step into the new thing. God says, love your, what? Enemy. Nah, see, you're programmed. Love your enemy, and pray for those who persecute you. Because when we start sending our good vibes to those that we have written off as enemies, a couple of things happen. Number one, when we really say, I want goodwill for you, we're gonna try our best, even if it's a little bit indirectly, we're gonna try our best to help them succeed instead of being bitter about it. We're also gonna not write them off so easily, saying, that person's my enemy, so I don't have to like them, so they are terrible, terrible people, and that makes me not as bad as them. Right? That's an easy out when it's the other. There are no thems, there are no others with God. And so what happens then is that when we love our enemy, when we pray for those who persecute us, when we then read like the 23rd Psalm that we read at funerals oftentimes, and it says, you prepare a table before me in the midst of my enemies. Now, all of a sudden, it's not that I have a good meal while other people watch on and they wish they could, but it's this call to hospitality that says, in face of my enemies, and you know, if you look around the room, I bet there's something that you could find that would separate you from every single other person in this space, that you could, for some reason or another, call them your enemy. But that psalm, if we read it with that understanding of hospitality, it's, you've prepared a table before me, before my enemies, you have prepared this table. And so when I pray goodness to somebody, when I then, those enemies quickly become dinner partners and we start to understand them. But the problem is when we start having a trouble looking over our wall and pointing fingers at the enemies, and kids die in internment camps because, well, their parents shouldn't have tried to come over the border because they wanted a better life, then we start pointing fingers and going, that's the problem, it's their fault. Instead of realizing that collective, it's one stinking table, and we've been the ones that have made the borders. That if we stop remembering that, then we've missed the point. But instead, if we stop pointing at those enemies, or maybe we say, come on over, have a seat. There's been atrocious things that have happened all around the world. But if we sit together, if we talk, if we take in the mystery and wonder of what God has made for us, if we have that table that is a little bit bigger, then we can value the children and the next generation and the today and the now, and give that gift of hospitality, and we get to participate in that transformative work that God is doing, that bringing heaven down bringing, you know, God's preferred future down here and now. And we can take a sample of that and say, this is what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be bring up another table, bring up another chair, because God is good. And so this week, love your neighbors, pray for those who persecute you, and extend that table in word and deed and all the things that you have. Let's go to God in prayer as we prepare the table for worship or for communion.